Welcome to Infertility and Me Podcast, a show that amplifies diverse stories about the struggles of infertility and fertility in a safe space. Our goal is to normalize fertility stories that validate, give hope, and create a community where no one is left silently suffering. Hey, you guys, welcome to Infertility and Me Podcast. Thank you for being here. Thank you for letting me be a part of your day. Thank you for listening. Today's guest is Akilla Safir. She is an early childhood educator, yoga instructor for pre, during, and postnatal care, as well as a published author and wife and mom to her almost six-year-old daughter. Akilla has written a book for children and moms and dads of only one child, as well as incorporating her secondary infertility story within that book. And it's in the show details, so you guys can check that out and support and purchase and pass it along to some people that you may know as well. But today, Akilla talks to us about her struggles in living with fibroids, some very large ones at that, and then also her secondary infertility experience and how going from being a fertile woman to an infertile woman because of her fibroids and the amount of risks that she would take in going through IVF and having a myomectomy and then possibly having a sibling, she just decided, her and her husband, that they would stop trying for a sibling after her fibroids were removed because it would weaken and diminish the stability of pregnancy if she became pregnant through IVF after having her fibroids removed, and it would cause another set of risks and complications. And so she tells us about that today in this episode. And at the time when she started trying to conceive for a sibling, she was already 37. And after 2 years for trying for that sibling and getting the news about, she also had a blocked fallopian tube. And so they, her and her husband, just decided, hey, we'll just stop. I'm going to get my fibroids taken care of, but we're going to stop because the risks are just too great for my body. And she also states that they're from the South. They live in the South. And it seems like everyone has 3 to 5 kids. And so the pressure was on thick in desiring that second baby, as well as her yoga studio where she had classes for moms who were trying to conceive, who were pregnant, and also postnatal care and struggling with being of support to them while also needing support herself through secondary infertility. And so this episode is for you, friend, if you have already conceived through IVF or any other form of treatment and or naturally. And also if you are considering trying to conceive for a sibling and you've already gotten the bundle from reproductive assistance and or naturally, and you're having some struggles and you feel like you are all alone and thinking that you're crazy for having this strong desire for wanting more children. And the bottom line is this, you guys, your life is yours to live. No one can tell you what that should look like. That's only for you and your spouse, if you have one, to decide. And so know that whatever you decide, it's okay. And Akilla also reminds us in this episode that sometimes we just have to accept the situation for exactly what it is and then make a heartfelt, sound decision from there. Today, friends, I hope that you get the comfort and validation that you need. And we will be back in just a second with Akilla. We're back, you guys, with our girl Akilla Safir on the podcast today, talking about her story through secondary infertility and now being a one and done mom. Some of you will relate, some of you may not, but just in case this scenario ever happens to you, you'll know how to get through it and do it with class, dignity, and grace as much as possible. We try, you know. But thank you, Akilla, so much again, my love, for coming onto the show and speaking to us and giving us your time and your energy.
Yeah, thank you, Monique. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
So just how did you meet your husband, this doctor, this handsome guy, this tall, handsome gentleman?
Well, we actually met in middle school. Ironically, right. But I was the older woman, so we didn't start dating right away.
OMG.
I was in eighth grade and he was in sixth grade. And I kind of knew him. My older sisters and his older sisters were in the same height. They were in the same classes in high school. So our families knew each other. But I didn't see him for years. Like, I knew he existed. But his oldest sister and my oldest sister were best friends. And when she started having kids in Chicago, she invited us to like the birthday parties. And so my husband would be there. And I remember when her son turned one, my husband was at the party and I was like, who is this tall drink of water? Like, he's 6'2" now. He doesn't have the bowl cut, no lisp. You know, like, I remember him from sixth grade. So it was kind of funny. But at the time, he had a steady girlfriend that I knew about because our families all talked. And then at the second birthday party, though, he was single. Our eyes met over the piñata, you know, like it was romance at a second birthday party. But yeah, he asked for my number and we started dating. And a couple years later, we got married and here we are.
Yes, that is so freaking cool. Yes. See, this is why I asked this question, because I can get into the details of you guys' business without being...
And you never know what you're gonna get.
Exactly. That is so cool. Wow. I love stories like that, especially when there's like a transformation in the way someone looks a little bit different. Like, they're like,
yes,
now you're my type. We can do it. Yes. This is great.
Well, also, he was in his medical residency. I'm like, okay, he's got a plan. You know, this man is.
Yes, he's well put together. Yeah.
Right. I've been dating other guys that weren't quite there. I was like, okay.
Yep. Womp, womp.
Yes.
That's exactly how it feels.
Right. You're like, jackpot. Okay, good.
Yes, indeed. That is so beautiful. Oh, I love it. I love it. So you guys have your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's going good. Hubby's now finished his residency and being a doctor is everything that he imagined it would be. And you guys are living your best life. You guys are living your best life. You're still teaching. Right? Were you still teaching after you had her, or had you already kind of phased out of it?
Yeah. So we had kind of an interesting transition. We both finished, I was teaching in Chicago and he was finishing his residency. And then he had a 1 year fellowship in Seattle and we moved there for just 1 year. And then he was going to hopefully get a job somewhere. And we started trying then, like right when we moved, I was 34 at the time. I was like, you know, let's get started. And we had some other family stuff going on. And I got pregnant the first time, which I like so dread saying that with people with primary infertility, because like that's not the case for majority of people. This was totally like, we were not planning. We were like, let's just start trying. It could take a year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she decided to come then. So she was born in Seattle.
Okay.
And then he got the job here in South Carolina. So we moved a couple times with the infant, which was interesting. So I wasn't teaching. I was an early childhood teacher before, but that transition was just a lot. And I really wanted to be home with her. I had my master's in early childhood. So I wanted to watch her develop and grow. But I decided to, my other passion is yoga. So I decided during that first year to get certified teach yoga. And I specifically liked pre and postnatal yoga. So that's what I was doing the first couple years while we were in Colombia.
Yes, I remember reading that in your bio for your book. I really thought it was special that you were helping moms who were trying to get pregnant and or were already pregnant and postnatal and everything with your yoga studio. And I've always enjoyed yoga myself too. I used to do a lot of it as well. And then I also have a special place in my heart for early childhood educators. My mom is one. She's getting ready to retire this summer. So what point did you guys decide that you were ready to start trying to conceive for a sibling after your daughter was born? How old was she when you started trying for a sibling?
She was almost two. So at the time I was 37. I had her when I was 35. So we're like, okay, you know, we can't wait too long. But because I had her on the first try, I was like, all right, we're probably, you know, probably happen again. I had fibroids before I got pregnant. I knew about that. And then they grew. They grow when you're pregnant, especially that first trimester because of the estrogen and blood flow. So one grew really big. One was, we named it Leo, leiomyoma. That's the technical name for fibroids. So I knew I had them, but, and there was definitely, they were monitoring me a lot more, but basically my pregnancy was pretty smooth. I had some issues, but, and I was able to birth her vaginally, unmedicated birth, like no C-section, which can, you know, happen, or preterm labor. There's a lot of risk factors with fibroids in pregnancy. And I was really lucky. I didn't really have any. So after 6 months, after you give birth, they say check about 6 months later to see if the fibroids go down. And mine did. It shrunk a little bit from 10 centimeters to 7. The biggest one, I have about 3 or 4. But the doctors didn't say, they were like, yeah, start trying, see what happens. So we started and nothing happened. And at that age, after 6 months, you're supposed to start, you know, doing more tests to see what's going on. And they did everything. They did an ultrasound. They did blood work, tested my husband. Everything was fine. So I was like, okay, this seems, you know, strange, but maybe it could take longer. You know, we were lucky in the first shot with our daughter. So we tried for a couple more months then, actually about a year in. And I was like, you know what? I need to take my mind off this because it's a lot and puts a lot of pressure on your marriage. And people started asking, which is like a whole other thing. And my daughter started asking for a sibling at around 3 because all her friends were having them. And it just like was this weight and like wanting this and kind of thinking each month. And, you know, as you know, you've been through fertility struggles that it can be really hard. So we got a puppy instead. We bought a sibling for our child, and she has taught me all kinds of things about patience and endurance and love and almost giving her up for adoption, but we kept her. So
wonderful.
She's a special dog. Yeah. Anyway, that kind of put us, I gave a little breather from this pressure of having another kid, and we took a little break during that time. Yeah, we started for about a year and a half in.
So about for a year. And then, so did you get your fibroids removed before seeing a reproductive endocrinologist, or did you go to the endocrinologist first and they recommended you get them removed? Because sometimes that happens as well, you know?
Yeah, totally. So they kind of assumed, people I talked to, the doctors, I actually talked to a midwife too, because I was interested in doing a home birth or something different. I had a hospital birth with my daughter, but I wanted to do a little different way. And the midwife seemed everything was fine. I told her my risk factors and things, my age. But about a year and a half in, I was like, something's going on. This is clearly not working. We were not protecting anything. And so I finally was like, okay, let's see a reproductive endocrinologist. But I wasn't wanting to do IVF or any other procedures, or I didn't know about surgery yet. So I was kind of hesitant because I was like, if this baby doesn't come somewhat naturally, then I think we'll be okay, you know, but whatever. It's a whole emotional roller coaster of being okay with things and
absolutely.
Not.
Yeah.
So I went in, I had an appointment to do a couple tests, an SIS, which is like a saline solution they put in, and then they do ultrasound to see. I did that on a Tuesday. So she said, oh, she looked and was like, okay, looks like, you know, your fibroids are there, but that shouldn't be impacting anything. We could probably remove this one, like one smaller one laparoscopically. I was like, great. So she kind of gave me hope that it would be this, you know, kind of simple procedure. This wasn't the greatest reproductive endocrinologist I've ever met. Because then on Thursday, I had an HSG, which is the hysteriosalpingogram, which I don't know if you got that done too.
Oh, yeah, girl. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know about this. So then they put a dye in and they x-ray you. So it's a little bit more specific. They can tell more about the uterine lining. They can see how the ovaries are doing, fallopian tubes. And it turned out that one of my fallopian tubes was blocked by the big fibroid was blocking that one. And also just my uterine lining. It had been good, but I think it's misshapen because of this huge fibroid on the side. Like so
pressing
nothing
on
could
it.
Implant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Leo was big. He was like, your uterus is 7 centimeters. And so the fibroid was 7 centimeters. So seeing it
they're
on fighting
for space
the image. Yes. Was like, just like eating it. Like a T-Rex. Like
get out of the way, buddy. So. Get out of the way. Get out of here. It's my turn to shine.
Yeah.
Fibroids are like ruthless. Okay. They will take over your entire reproductive system. Just like endometriosis.
Yes.
Two of the worst kinds of diseases to have to deal with. And suffer through. My mom had fibroids and they were like humongous. Okay. Humongous.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the fact that so many women have them and it caused so many issues, like what is happening? I feel like this can't have been, you know, it is kind of common and they're usually benign. They don't really cause problems, but a lot of women have problems, especially black women. Like it's so common.
I just feel like I have like all of these conspiracy theories that are like backed by science as well as just paying attention to the history of the United States and what we consume and how we consume it and the material.
Diet, environment.
And then there was a documentary on Netflix like 3 years ago that talked about how the cast iron skillets, the first ones that used to come out, like the Teflon.
Yeah.
It's so much like, oh my gosh, it had so many chemicals in it that was giving people cancerous, benign and cancerous growths all over their bodies. And so that's when they started changing the materials used for cooking, because they were marketing them at a time in the 50s and 40s and 60s where women were staying home and they were cooking every day, three meals. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we're consuming this thing
cancer
now.
Pans.
And these are the repercussions we're seeing now, because there's no way that this was happening 100 years ago. There's no way.
Right.
We weren't estrogen dominant like this. No, no way.
Yes.
No.
Well, also, so estrogen, right, that's something that the fibroids feed off of. And we have so much in our diet with soy, like soy products are in everything. And I was vegetarian for a while. So I ate a lot of tofu and soy milk and vegan for a little bit. So I'm like, I ate so many of those products. And now I'm like, is that it? Although, but like my doctors, it's interesting because I'm like, what causes them? They don't know. How do I prevent them? They don't know. I'm like, I don't understand how there's no, again, research. Like why is money not being put toward this disease that affects so many? It's 80% of women over 50 will have them.
And you know what's so funny is that the research is happening and it's kind of like hush hush. It's like they almost don't want to tell us what's really happening here. Okay. We went off on a tangent, you guys, but I'm sure many of you feel the same way that we do, because I've had similar conversations in private DMs with people, you know. But I guess hopefully we'll do better. But that's, I guess, that's why we're here having these conversations. Yeah. Somebody openly will be listening.
I want to do, like, I'm like, my next life, I'm going to do fibroid research and, like, interview women.
Yes.
It's interesting. I'm from the south side of Chicago and, like, near where Michelle Obama grew up. And she also had fertility issues. My two of my siblings also have had fertility issues. I'm like, environment is probably huge. I'm like, I want to study neighborhoods and see, you know, what are the rates of women having infertility issues and stuff. There.
Yeah, so interesting.
That's my next gig.
Yeah, I could see you doing that and getting, like, what is it, public health? Master's in public health?
Yeah, I like this. Children's book to public health.
Yeah, one day. Yeah, especially since you're already so passionate about the fertility community, as well as being a mom of one and stuff, and working through secondary infertility.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Yeah, so okay, so I had this appointment for the HSG, and the woman was like, oh, we can't do that simple procedure. She basically told me, okay, while I'm still on the table with my, like, you know, parts hanging out, which was like a gown, she's like, not like, let's go talk in the office or something, or, you know, when you get cleaned up. No, she's like, the fibroid's so big and blocking everything, you're going to have an open myomectomy, which is like an abdominal. They cut it open and take out the fibroid, which is an inpatient procedure. Like 2 to 5 days, you have to stay at the hospital, and a 6 to 8 week recovery. Then you have to wait 6 months for your uterus to heal to even try. She's like, you'll probably have to do IVF. I was like, okay. And then after that, you have to have a C-section because of uterine rupture possibility.
Exactly.
I was like, what? So, like, this is from Tuesday, where I had hope, like, a little small procedure might help, to basically, you're infertile. Like, basically, with all these interventions and all this expensive and time-consuming things, you maybe can have another kid. So I'm like sitting there, and then she left the room. I was like, what? I'm like bawling and looking at the nurses with me.
That.
I was like, that was it was literally the worst bedside manner that I've ever had. I was like, you just told me the most devastating news and bounced. And like, not even like, let's talk in the office with your husband, you know, like, let's talk about possibilities. It was like, this is what's going to happen. So I just, you know, I was like devastated, went home, talked to my family. We're very open with my daughter about what was going on, because she'd been asking, and because we talk openly about our bodies and things like that. So we discussed it over time, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, my daughter was 3, our puppy was 6 months old and crazy. My husband works really, it's like just no schedule. Basically, he works hours, like right now he's on call for a week.
His flexibility.
Yes. Yeah. He's a neurosurgeon. So like his schedule is just insane all the time. Wow. So I wouldn't have his support. We don't have any family where we live. And I was starting my business. My yoga business was growing. I was teaching workshops and classes all over the city. I didn't have my own studio. That was kind of my dream before COVID messed all that up. But so anyway, this happened. I was like, I don't, you know, like, that's a lot. And financially, it's a lot, you know, time, giving up my body for all this, for, you know, like the small chance. I was 39 at the time when I got this diagnosis. So I was like, I went from trying to conceive to infertile in like a day. And that just blew me away. I wasn't thinking that that was a possibility, honestly. Like, I knew we were struggling, but so yeah, that's when it really hit me and the reality of all of it. I was like, okay. Yeah. And then just kind of like slowly letting go of the fact, like, we had saved all my daughter's baby stuff. And so I slowly started giving it to families and friends, my yoga moms, some neighbors, my maternity clothes. And that was kind of like cathartic and kind of cleansing, because you have this dream of what it's supposed to be like. And we had a 4-bedroom house, so we could have our family visit, and then two rooms for the kids, and all these things that you kind of set up because you expect this to happen.
Well, see, you've done everything else you ever said you were going to do.
Yeah. And I'm like a type. I'm like, oh, we're going to do this. We're going to get this done. Like, let's do this. Right. And it's really shocking when things don't go the way that you expect. And so, yeah, that was a lot. And I actually never heard the term secondary infertility. Like, the doctors never said that term. I just assumed infertility. But a friend of mine who happens to be a doula and works in the birth community, she was like, oh, I was telling her my story. She's like, oh, you have secondary infertility. And even just naming it was validating. Like, oh, this is a thing. Like, I honestly didn't know anyone else. I knew no one going through this. So I felt very isolated. And I had all these people asking me about having another kid. And I was like, I'm trying, you know, like, or get out of my business. So yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah. And so did you ever go back to the RE after your removal of fibroids and all that and then the terrible bedside manner that you had? Did you ever go back at all? And
oh, no.
No. Okay.
She was like, just set this up in September. Or this is August. She was like, okay, in September, you can set up with it. And I was like, oh, I'm not doing, like, no, nothing you said sounds good to me. But the fact that you asked that. And then this past January, I decided to get the big one removed because it was causing me issues and kind of thinking about my fertility, but also just like, I want to be done. Like mentally, it was blocking me. Physically, it caused problems. So I got, but not the open. The open myomectomy is really intense. So I talked to my gynecologist and she recommended some other surgeons who, OB-GYN surgeons, who do a laparoscopic robotically assisted procedure.
That's what my mom had. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That one is so much better. It's outpatient. So I was in the morning and my husband took me home and then it's about a 2-week recovery. And it was, the first couple of days were hard, but not even because of the surgery. I mean, the incisions hurt a little bit, but it was the anesthesia. And then they have to put gas in you to blow up your abdomen so they can see everything. And that was the hard part. Like a couple of days of that were bad. And then I feel great. Like literally this like weight lifted out of my gut. And so I did get it, but not with that RE and more just for my medical health, like my personal health.
What's interesting about your story as well, because you were catering and serving essentially pregnant moms and moms to be and moms postnatal. So were there times before COVID, of course, when you were forced to have to stop, right? Were there times where you ever considered leaving the industry altogether because of your own desires to expand your family, weighing so heavy and being around all these, for some, maybe not all, some fertile women within your studio?
Yeah, I mean, you put it perfectly. That's exactly how it felt. Like after I got my diagnosis in August of 2019, and I was pretty open with some of the moms, like they're my friends, they're wonderful. Like all these moms were kind of going through an experience that I had, you know, I already had my daughter. And they were just so supportive as a community together. And this is pre-COVID. So we were all meeting together for our prenatal classes. And then a lot of them would give birth. And then they come to my postnatal classes, which was great because then you kind of get back into your body. You can bring baby. You form this community of other moms. Like, it was wonderful. I loved it. That was what was the hard part was. But you're right. Like it became the day I got my diagnosis, I had to teach that night. And I was the only instructor teaching pre and postnatal in the town I live in. So I was like, I felt like I had to. I mean, I probably should have called off class, but I went anyway. And like, I just kind of, you know, pulled through and got through the class. And again, I love the women. I really didn't want them to miss it. Like my classes were growing and they told me how much they enjoyed it. And it felt good to, you know, move your body and prepare for labor. So that was really intense. And then COVID hit that next March where all the studios shut down and I moved some classes online, but it was almost like a breather. You know, I could like, okay, I did some classes online and then I just kind of stopped because online, it was just so different. There's no, it's hard to have a community and the moms couldn't interact. And, you know, I was using like my computer, my phone. I hadn't set up for that. Like you're not trained to do tech stuff. You know, most people, you know, during COVID had to flip to like Zoom and stuff. So yeah, it was kind of nice to just, it was hard. It was hard to see that all these pregnant people and young, you know, with their little babies. But I also saw like how hard it was. Like some of them did have problems conceiving. So I know a lot of them dealt with infertility and treatments. So I knew it wasn't easy for everyone. And then I saw them, you know, postnatally, like 6 weeks after they're, you know, they're exhausted and they're, you know, figuring out breastfeeding and all these things. And I was like, ooh, that looks really hard. So it was like a little bit of both, a little bit of like, oh, the reality is I like forget how hard it is at the beginning. And
yeah, we do.
You know, you kind of push that out of your mind when you try to have another. But for me, I think now it's harder when people have a second kid. When they have their first, I'm excited for them. But the second really like gets me because I think that's something I can't have. So
know that feeling all too well.
Yeah.
Getting me on the right day. It's like you get they get you on the right day and you'll break down in tears. Okay.
Yes. Social media is like the worst. It's like you know, birth announcements, pregnancy. I'm like,
yeah,
I had to get off. I got off that too, which was helpful. And then I got therapy because I was like, I'm dealing with this. I don't really know how to process it all. And my therapist talked to me about my daughter's experience too, because she kept asking, like literally every day would ask for a sibling. And she would pretend she knew what my work was. And so she would pretend to be pregnant and she would have, you know, 10 babies around the house. And I knew it was like important to her. And I was like, it feel like I was letting her down. And also my husband, like he's one of four, I'm one of five. Like we have these big families. Okay. And so it was, he never put pressure. He understood and was like, yeah, we have one great kid.
That's
like
great.
And she's getting easier each year, you know, they get easier, less, you know, they need less help and they're out of diapers and all these things that he's like, it's okay. He was very supportive in that, but it was also hard. I wasn't sure I wanted to give up, but there was like no out.
It's always a back and forth. you know?
Yes.
You're like the bobblehead. That's how I feel. Yes. Sometimes. It's like bobblehead. Do I really want to? No, maybe not today. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
And you don't know why. Like, some days I'm fine and some days I'm like, no, I really want this. Sometimes I'm like, no, I don't want that. Yeah. You know? So.
Yeah. And it's so funny because a lot of people who, like you, have had really good, intense therapy say that they still bobbling back and forth, but they like they know how to manage it better. Would you say that your therapy helped you to manage it better? And would you encourage others in the community to seek help if they came to you and say, Kylie, did therapy work for you in getting past fertility? What would you recommend to them as far as
100%? Like, I looked up someone who, you know, a lot of the therapists will put what their specialties are. Like, some people are dealing with loss or, you know, trauma and infertility. Like, they'll put that. And I think finding someone specifically who either deals with people with it or has gone through it, I think that's helpful too. 100%. I feel like you need that outside perspective. And she not only helped me, so she told me, like, you know, write down your feelings. Also write down your daughter's feelings because it's a loss for her. She had wanted this too. And I had never really seen it that way. You know, I knew she was struggling, but I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And that's the idea for my book came in because I started looking for books about secondary infertility for me and then secondary infertility and like wanting a sibling for a kid. And there was nothing. I found one book about, for me, like a mom's book, and it was only in ebook form, which was fine. But in the end, she has a second kid, like in the epilogue. I was like, are you kidding me? So I read this whole thing like, yes, I feel you. I feel you. I'm going through the same thing. And she's like, oh, by the way, I was able to conceive again, which just like broke my heart. I'm like, this is not just, you know, I like, so I felt a little let down on that one.
It's almost like when you connect with, say, somebody like how we connected online, right? And then you connect with a book. Because especially for us 80s and 70s babies, like we're all about the books. Like I need the physical copy of it. I need to smell it.
Turn the pages.
I need to lick my finger and do the whole motion, right? So when I understand that when you say in the epilogue, she says, oh, but by the way, I ended up having another baby. It's like, God darn it. I thought.
Yeah, we were in the same boat. I thought we were sisters on this.
Yeah, I thought we were. And then it turns out that although they could relate, they're out of it in a, you know, it's different for them now, you know?
Yes. So, And then the kids' books about only children, there's so few. I couldn't believe it. Even now, besides my immediate family and some really close friends, no one knew I was going through this, honestly. So when I put it out there, I got so much support and positive feedback and other people telling me their infertility struggles. I was like, wow, it's like really opening up this dialogue. Other people tell me they want to write children's books. Like a lot of people are like, how did you go about it? And
well, you'll be selling courses soon on how to do it. Step by step courses by Kyla S.
Right. That is hilarious.
Yes.
Also, because I had to kind of give up the yoga. Like it was getting painful seeing, you know, like,
and it was your business.
It was really him. That's what I was doing.
Like your baby.
Yeah, that was my other baby. Exactly. And I spent so much time and energy into it and, you know, marketing myself and teaching all over the city. So giving that up and finding like another way, another outlet or creative thing that I really wanted to do. And so this book has kind of translated into that, which I'm so grateful for because I tried to go back to teaching and it was just too much. And my daughter still needed me so much and I was exhausted and I tried it for a few months. And I was like, I can't do this. I'm in my 40s. I'm like, I'm too old for, you know, being back in that right now. So I needed like another space to feel like confident about what I can do. And I'm so excited this book. And then I have some ideas for other series I'm going to do. So to be, it's like a nice new path for me. And I have so much support. You've been like wonderful support.
Oh no, it's my pleasure. I love supporting you guys. And because somebody had to support me too, you know, when I first got started with the podcast and getting the word out about it and helping women find tribe and community and such.
Well, and also just coming to terms with being an only child family. Like that's a whole other process, especially, I don't know if you have siblings, but
I do, but from a different mom. My dad was married to their mother first. And so I am my mom's only child. And so I grew up in the house by myself, but I didn't want to have just one kid. I really wanted to.
You don't expect it. Mm-mm. It's like this whole mental shift of like everything. But then becoming to like with just the Only You podcast and the community of women, I'm on Patreon with them too.
So exactly.
It's like we get to communicate with each other and support each other and talk about, you know, things that go on and how easy it is to have one kid versus multiple. I'm like, it is. Yeah. Like, honestly, just appreciating that and also being present more. Like once I kind of let go of we're going to have another kid, I could like really be present with my daughter and our family and not be distracted by what could be or whatever. You know, it was really, I don't want to do it anymore. I was like, okay, I need to just be here. And yoga is all about being present in the moment.
Acceptance is coming up a lot in these last few episodes I've had. Like everybody has literally come on without me asking. about acceptance and they've said it. So I feel like acceptance is our word for this year. Like we're going to accept where we are and we're just going to deal with it head on and we're not going to try to bypass it.
Yeah. And rebirth. This is my rebirth this year, 2022. You know? I feel like for the world, like, okay.
For everybody, like COVID just like shut us down. And then like we had to all go through like this butterfly cocoon phase.
Yes.
And here we are. Yeah. So now we're coming back out and we've got our wings flapping and stuff. But I feel like the connection with your story and now being a mom of one and done, having dealt with secondary infertility for 2 years, 2-3 years. And I think it's important because I'm seeing a lot of people in the community getting pregnant and then they're now ready to start for that sibling. And so just that's why I had to get you on. And I was so glad that you were able to get on quickly because
well, because it's 50% of infertility is secondary. Did you know? Like that is,
I did.
I learned
and
about
when
that
I learned
too,
about like, that, oh I was gosh. Like, what? You kidding me? There's that many women who get pregnant once and then can't do it the second time.
Yeah. Wow. And some of it is like they did IVF the first time and can't, you know, like
For sure.
Assisted reproductive technology for sure. Like that is obviously a huge portion of it too, but yeah. So I don't know what your journey was with second, but like, it's hard because you kind of have this expectation of most people, at least in the only you community, majority are, we're not expecting just one. And then whatever circumstance happened, some are like, I wanted one, you know, my husband and I talked about it or my partner and I talked about it and here we are and they're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it was a journey to get to that point of like really appreciating what we do have. And I also think that's important. Women shouldn't just have to focus on their fertility, you know, like,
Like
there's
we're
so many other ways that we, and we give so much to the world in so many different ways that I think it's important to acknowledge that, not just baby making, which it's in the South, it's very common. So it's been a journey being also
it's
here.
It's about, okay? You don't have any children and you live in the South? What is wrong with you?
I know. We're literally the only one
child
family.
Together, okay? I noticed that when we were there a couple weeks ago, I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. Like, are we the only ones with one child? Like, what's happening here? Young and old people. It didn't matter who it was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It seemed like everybody had at least two or three and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. I wish I could do it. And you know, it's so crazy now with my son. I'm like, how the hell would I even care for a second child? He's got so many energy. Oh my God. I'm in the gym 5 days a week just to keep up with him. Okay. You guys are serious out here.
I think that's it too. Just realizing like, oh my God, maybe one was what I could handle. You know, people say that God gives you what you can handle. And with my husband's job and no family nearby, like there's a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard to hear, but like, honestly, like looking at it, like the bright
because
side
of your
things,
lifestyle. Then, you guys are busy people. And then like you said, with your husband's demanding industry as a doctor.
I'd be doing it all myself. I'm like, God, that seems really
probably
hard.
Why he has never really pressured you about having more because he knows that you're doing all the work at home. You're doing the brunt of the work.
I do the dog, the house, the kid. I'm like, okay, so I'm good. My plate is full and doing my own thing.
Shout out to hubby for being understanding.
Yeah,
guy right there. I can tell. I haven't even met him. No. Oh, but thank you, Kyla, my dear. This has been a blast. A blast. I'm so glad we got to know you more. I got to know you more. We finally got to meet, and hopefully, we'll be able to meet in real life.
Yes, come down
in the
south.
Near future.
And
if there's a word for the community that you would like to say for those who are thinking of trying for a sibling, whether their first time was through a reproductive endocrinologist help or not. What would you say to other moms who are struggling for that sibling and what helped you move through it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think give yourself that space and time to grieve. That was one thing I didn't really do. Like, I guess once I found out, get therapy, definitely. That's what my therapist said. She's like, you can grieve this loss. Like, take time, cry, like, let it out. Don't try to like hold it in. And I think also using a creative outlet, like you have the podcast, people do blogging, I wrote this book, people do art, like there's so many outlets to help process it and even like get out in the world if that's what you want to do to share your story. I think that's really helped me with turning this pain into a creative outlet has been great. But yeah, mom, be gentle on yourself. Like it is a really hard process. It's not, some days it's fine like we talked about and some days it's hard and just kind of acknowledging that, trying to thrive as much as possible during it. Be present with if you have one child or your puppy or your cat or whoever's in your life that loves you unconditionally, soak that all up because it goes quick. Time goes quick and they get bigger and enjoying that. Your first child, if you have it.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
And where can we find you on Instagram, dear?
Yeah. So it's my name, Kyla_Saphir_books. And I'll spell that because it's a little unusual. Kyla's K-Y-L-A Saphir's S-A-P as in Peter, H-I-R, and then underscore books. And my website's my name too, KylaSaphirBooks.com. I haven't got any creative names yet. I mean, I'm just starting this path. But yeah, my book's out at the end of April, and then I'm having a book launch party, which is really fun, like the beginning of May, which is on actually my daughter's due date. It was May 7th. So that'll be fun, you know, because we won't have another like baby shower or sprinkle. So this is kind of a celebration of this book baby that I'm giving birth to.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And celebrating something else.
You guys know where to find me on Instagram, Infertility and Me Podcast, everywhere, anywhere you can think of. And yeah, that's it for today.
Get on Brighter Days, the book. Yeah.
Yes, Brighter Days.
On Brighter Days, yeah.
It'll be in the show details for you to tap and go purchase and maybe purchase another one for somebody else that you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or put it in your free little library. Yes, that's what indeed. Some people are doing. They're donating to that. Spread the word.
Yes. Please do. Support our girl Kyla and her efforts to spread the word about being mom and dads of secondary infertility as well as one and done parents. And guess what, you guys? It's all okay. Everything. It's all right. Okay. Whatever you choose to do. Whatever you choose to do. So we thank you again for being here, Kyla. Yeah, appreciate you so much. And that's it for this week, friends.